Cinema St. Louis kicks off its 25th anniversary St. Louis International Film Festival next Thursday evening. More than 400 films will be screened over the 10 days of the festival, representing 119 countries. St. Louis On the Air contributor Steve Potter has more.
This year, the St. Louis International Film Festival kicks off with a beer tasting reception and a screening of St. Louis Brews, a documentary film still in progress by director Bill Streeter, who's here with us now. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I take it that St. Louis Brews, or at least part of it, can be seen at the reception?
Oh, yeah. We're going to screen about an hour of material from the film. And there'll be fairly complete scenes, although by the time we finish the film, some of these scenes may end up being cut or slightly different. So you may actually see some of the footage that nobody will ever see again.
Well, how far are you in the process, and when do you think you'll actually have it completed?
So we have about 90% of the material that we need to complete the film in the can. There's a couple of events that we're waiting on to complete the film. So like one of the storylines that we shot that we've been following is Earthbound Brewing. They were the smallest brewery in St. Louis when they opened, but we started following them before they opened. And they opened on a very small shoestring budget. They had a really successful first year. We followed them through the first year. They're now well into the second year, coming up on the beginning of the third year. But the thing that we're waiting on is they are moving into a new location, a larger location. But it's a building that is a historic brewery building. So it was a brewery that closed about 100 years ago. So they're really, like in this film, we're trying to tie the modern craft brewing movement, which is huge and growing crazily nowadays, to the history of brewing in St. Louis, which is rich and deep and broad.
Well, I want to ask you about that, but is it a little unusual for the film festival to show parts of a film that's not done yet at their festival?
I think that's probably true. I don't know. You would have to talk to them about that. But they invited me to screen this film. We thought we would be done with it when they invited me to do it by this point, but because of some of the things that we want to get and capture in the film and some other reasons, we haven't quite finished in time. But we had enough to screen, and I think the topic is popular enough that they thought it would be a good opening night screening.
So beer is popular?
I think so, yeah. I've heard. I don't know.
Not just in St. Louis, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, St. Louis has, as you allude to, has long been known as a beer brewing hotspot. But you just a minute ago mentioned all these current breweries that are going on now. But I thought the big beer brewing days of St. Louis were the days gone by.
No. You would have thought. You know, it's funny. In the late, somewhere around the 1870s, nobody knows exactly when we peaked with the number of breweries in the 19th century. But we peaked somewhere around 40 breweries.
That was about the time Budweiser was introduced, right?
Right around that time. Yeah. 1876 is when Budweiser was introduced. But there were somewhere around 40 breweries. There may have been a few more, a few less, but as near as anybody can document, somewhere around 40. This year, there are actually 50 breweries operating in St. Louis now.
50.
So we've hit a new peak. We're more than has ever been historically are operating in the region now.
I don't know anything about this, so explain to me. But the breweries of 100 years ago, they were known nationally, correct? Is this true? The small breweries that you're talking about today, are they more regional in nature?
Well, I could go very deep with this, but I won't. Some of the breweries that operating in St. Louis over 100 years ago, like Anheuser-Busch and Lemp and a few others, were actually distributing nationally, and some of them were among the first to distribute nationally and worldwide even. Lemp sold beer back to Germany in the 1800s. But the breweries that are operating in St. Louis now, most of them are craft breweries. They used to call them microbreweries, but they're smaller operations. And I'm sure a few of them have aspirations to go national at some point, but most of them are only shipping regionally and maybe to a couple of other regions in the country. So like Schlafly, for instance, I think is distributed in New York City and Washington, D.C. and some other places, and I think a few of the other breweries. Now, some of these breweries really do special releases. They get collected all over the country, and some of them even bootlegged. You know, so I've heard of bottles from Perennial or Side Project being sold on the black market in California for like $200 or $300 a bottle. So,
wow, is this a trend that's happening in other large cities as well, or is it really specific to here?
Well, to be frank, St. Louis was actually kind of behind the curve in terms of craft brewing for a long, long time. And I think that probably had a lot to do with the fact that we were a brewery town. We were Anheuser-Busch, you know, we were the home of Anheuser-Busch, and I think that that probably scared off some people from starting craft brewing here, and probably scared off some consumers from, you know, because of their brand loyalty to Anheuser-Busch, they didn't want to like necessarily try a beer. But once Anheuser-Busch was bought out by InBev, then I think people's loyalties changed a little bit, and they decided to open up their minds a little bit and try some new beer. And then a number of those people who left Anheuser-Busch after that buyout went on and started breweries. So like Urban Chestnut was started by a founder of one of their founders was from Anheuser-Busch. Yeah, we were actually a little bit behind the curve. There's been a long craft brewing movement happening in California and Oregon and Washington State and Colorado, and it's probably even more developed there than it is here.
You mentioned the sale of Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah.
Did that affect the mentality of beer drinkers in St. Louis? Was that a big deal?
Oh, yeah.
Was that devastating?
Well, I don't know how much it affected. Like I said, I think that, Anheuser-Busch has been a great company for St. Louis. You know, so many people worked here. They're very involved in the community. They donated a lot to a lot of great causes. And I think that loyalty that they built up over the years, I think people were afraid to branch out and try some new things. And once that buyout happened, I think they felt maybe some people felt a little betrayed by it. And they thought maybe we'll try Schlafly now. Maybe we'll try, this new craft beer that just opened across the street or something, you know. So it did change the market a bit, I think, locally.
Does that mean our tastes are becoming a little more sophisticated?
Maybe. I don't know. Anheuser-Busch does actually make a pretty broad – they have a pretty broad portfolio now. And they've bought a number of craft – you know, craft beer is the largest – it's the fastest – it's really the only segment of the beer market that's growing. The traditional beer market is a shrinking market, but craft beer is growing – rather quickly, so they're not dumb. They're gonna jump on that bandwagon.
So your film St. Louis Brews, how do you begin?
How do we begin?
I mean, is it chronologically?
Well, the film's not done yet.
Oh, right.
So
right.
I don't know. Right. I don't know how we're gonna begin. Honestly, what we see in the third.
Well, what are the three segments then that
we'll
see?
There's about four segments. So we're gonna talk about the Germans. We're going to talk about the German immigration, because without the German immigration in the 19th century, we would not have a beer industry in this country.
And that began earlier than the 1870 date you mentioned,
yes,
like three or four decades before that.
1849 was when the big – 1848 was the big initial wave of Germans, and there were thousands and thousands of Germans who came immediately after the failed revolutions in what is now known as Germany. Germany didn't actually exist back then. And St. Louis actually became a German-speaking city at that point. You know, there's people who remember their grandparents who weren't of German descent, but they spoke German.
My great-grandfather came here at 14 years old from Germany, I know, in like the 1850s. I think it was. And my grandmother actually went to German-speaking schools in St. Louis.
Yes. Yeah. So Nini Harris, one of the people we interviewed in the film, her grandmother spoke German. She was
right.
Irish. She was Irish, but she grew up in Soulard. Everybody spoke German in Soulard.
Right.
So,
yeah. I know Nini. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, listen, you've produced hundreds of videos. I guess most of them have been maybe industrial.
Yeah, we do a lot, I have a company, Hydraulic Pictures, and we produce a lot of corporate stuff for not-for-profits. We produce their KWMU. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a lot of music videos, and I did another film, a feature film called Brick by Chance and Fortune.
Which sort of has ties to Soulard as well, doesn't it?
Yes,
because of the bricks?
Well,
right.
There's brick everywhere in St. Louis,
right.
Really, so, which is why I made that film. That seemed to be, you know, that one, surprisingly, you wouldn't think a movie about a building material would be that popular, but it seems to have struck a chord with people, and I hear about that film all the time, which is, you know, great. So.
We have an old commercial from the 1950s, an old beer commercial from the 50s that's included in your film about Falstaff, and Falstaff plays a huge part in the story that you tell, doesn't it?
Yeah, so one of the segments we're gonna screen is the story of Falstaff. So Falstaff was a brand that was actually outsold Budweiser in St. Louis for many, many years, and I think it was
cheaper, wasn't it?
I don't know. It was a very popular beer in St. Louis for a long, long time. I always heard that Gussie Bush was always really mad about the fact that Falstaff outsold Budweiser in their hometown. But yes, so Falstaff was in business as a company immediately after Prohibition all the way through 1977. So,
well, let's listen to this old 1950s commercial, right, and maybe you can comment on it.
All right.
Take care. Take extra care. man-sized pleasure is your reward. Man-sized, like the pleasure you get from Falstaff beer. Because Falstaff takes extra care to make the finest beer possible, even to overflowing every can or bottle, driving out the air to protect the premium quality taste of Falstaff until you're ready to enjoy it. Taste to satisfy your man-sized thirst, light enough to leave room for more. Try it. For man-sized pleasure, this is the one.
Oh, good. Room for more.
Yeah. Room for more, yeah. Falstaff. Falstaff's an interesting company. You know, it started out, the brand began as a Lemp brand. It was owned by Lemp, and it was sold to the Greasy Dick family right at the beginning of Prohibition because Billy Lemp Jr. decided to close the Lemp plant, and he thought Prohibition was never going to end. The Greasy Dicks and the Bushes were always very optimistic that at least beer would be legal again someday. So they maintained all the way through Prohibition, and Prohibition almost killed all of them, but including Anheuser-Busch. But the Greasy Dick family survived, and the Anheuser-Busch survived. And immediately after Prohibition, Papa Joe Greasy Dick revived Falstaff as a brand. It had the exact same logo the Lemps had. I assume it's the same recipe. And it was a very popular beer. They pioneered sports sponsorships and things like that. And they were known for those commercials. They were known for they were really innovative in terms of their creative advertising.
Well, that advertising was so directed towards men.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, it was the 50s.
But did women not enjoy beer as much back in those days?
I think at that point, by the 50s, I think beer had sort of become like a commodity almost. And there wasn't a lot of differentiation really between flavors and things. And it was really marketed towards men as a manly drink, which is unusual because in prior history in Germany, like it was really considered to be a feminine drink. Like women made it and women drank it.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yep.
What are some of the other brands of beer that you address in your film that maybe we've forgotten about or haven't heard of?
Well, there's a number of breweries that were popular. The brands were a fairly original, fairly new thing by the end of the 19th century. But so Budweiser was one of the early brands. Budweiser made a beer called Faust beer, which they revive and you can actually taste occasionally at the beer garden.
Is that related to the Faust family of St. Louis?
The Faust family. It was made. Adolphus Busch was a friend of Tony Faust, who owned a famous restaurant downtown.
And I think they ended up being in-laws.
Probably. Mm-hmm. Probably. And he made a beer for Tony Faust's restaurant. And Anheuser-Busch dug up that old recipe, and they actually make it, and you can try it. It's actually a really interesting tasting beer if you're into unusual beers. There were breweries like the Winkelmeyer Brewery or the Wainwright Brewery. The Wainwright Brewery, we know the Wainwright Building downtown. That was built as an office building for the Wainwright Brewery initially. And you can see remnants of our brewing history all over town.
There was a book that inspired this film for you.
Yep. Yeah, St. Louis Brews is the name of the book. It was published by Reedy Press. The first edition came out in 08, and they had a new edition about a year ago. I'm friends with Josh, who owns Reedy Press, and he's been bugging me. Josh Stevens, and he's been bugging me to make this film for a long time, so I finally got around to it.
Really? What's your interest?
My interest? Well, I always find the topic fascinating. I've been into craft beer for a long time, and I love history in St. Louis, so it was sort of a natural topic for me.
After the showing of the parts of your film at this opening reception for the festival, you're going to have a question and answer session. I think some brewers are going to be there. What's happening?
Yeah. We invited some of the people that appear in the film. So Chris Naffiger, one of the historians that appears in the film, who's written a lot about brewing for various publications in St. Louis, is going to be there. Don Roussin, who is a collector of beer memorabilia, who is also featured in the film, who co-author of the book, is going to be there for the Q&A. And I think Stuart Keating, who is a principal at the Earthbound Brewery, and he will be there to answer questions too. So I think we're going to have a little section on Earthbound in that screening as well. So you'll get a little peek into the origins of one of the smallest breweries in St. Louis. So,
well, what are your plans for the film once you wrap it up? Are you looking maybe to be a part of the festival next year?
I don't know. It depends on And when we finish, we'll have a premiere. We'll probably have a local premiere at some point when it's finished. I think I'm going to take it in the festival circuit. I think that this is – so I did this brick documentary, which did very well locally, but it didn't really travel outside of St. Louis because it was a little too St. Louis, right?
Because who in Cincinnati cares about our brick?
Yeah, who cares about our brick? St. Louis brick outside of St. Louis.
Beer's different,
though. But I think beer's a little different. I think this film might travel. So I'm interested to see if there's – what the possible distribution – I'll be interested in exploring some distribution opportunities with festivals and things. So,
well, you've been doing this project for a while, and as a personal beer lover, what do you think was the most interesting or surprising thing that you've discovered in this process of digging into the history of brewing in St. Louis?
The origins of American lager, like your standard American lager, like Budweiser. You know, what I always heard as a craft beer drinker that those types of beers, those American lagers, those light American lagers were made to be inexpensive, cheap. They were basically cheapening out to make a cheap mass-produced product. And while they are a mass-produced product, they were not cheapening out. And I discovered that there was actually some very, very good reasons, which you'll learn on November 3rd, why that beer came about. And it had nothing to do with being cheap.
Well, Bill Streeter, we're looking forward to seeing St. Louis Brews when it's completed. Thank you, and I guess what? Cheers?
Proust!
That was Steve Potter speaking with film director Bill Streeter. Scenes from Streeter's documentary, St. Louis Brews, will be screened following a reception to open the 2016 St. Louis International Film Festival next Thursday evening. That's at 6:30 at the Tivoli Theater. The festival will continue through November 13th. You can find more details at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.